The GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First 5 GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Sarah Golding, who is a GP, but also has an interest as a career coach, which is certainly something I don't know a lot about. So over to you, Sarah. Can you start by telling us, what is a career coach?
A career coach, it's kind of my own title. I think coaches, I'm sure we'll get onto this, they're not a regulated profession. So when I became a coach and I decided I wanted to train, I needed to find an area that I was passionate about, that I wanted to work in. So I am niched, in air quotes, as a career coach for medics, because as some of your previous guests have said, you want to be passionate about the work you do, and it's an area that I had spent time looking at. So a career coach for me is somebody that helps you look at where you're going to thrive in work. My husband, who's a hospital doctor, joked, "Oh, right, are you helping everybody leave their jobs?" No, it's helping you look at how you can move forward in your thinking. People are often stuck and go, look, I'm really not happy, or I'm not satisfied, or this, that, or the other is bothering me, and I don't know how quite to get there. So it's helping them sit with their thoughts, work out what's really going on for them, and then work out, okay, what next that fits with what really matters? Because we can really get caught up in doing the day-to-day job, looking at what everybody else is doing, and not really thinking of that kind of bird's eye view. What matters in the rest of my life? What actually really fires me up? So it's a huge area, really.
You mentioned that your sort of special niche area is career coaching for medics. Could you give those who don't really know much about coaching a bit of an idea of what coaching in general is about? Is it all about problem solving, or is it a bit wider than that?
Yeah, and I think where it's good to come down to the really purest form of coaching, because sometimes people think, you're going to give me a list of all the potential possibles and tell me how to do it. That is not coaching. Coaching goes with the theory that you have all the answers that you need, and it's how to help you get there. So it's really helping you. Carl Rogers was sort of the father of coaching, and the concept is very similar to GP consulting. The idea that I look at you with unconditional positive regard, so I want the best for you, but actually I'm really not attached to your outcome. Coaching, I think, is a very broad term, and people have lots of different ideas of what it can be. You know, what's a life coach? What's a health coach? And really it's a matter of finding out what different types of coaches do and whether that fits with what you want. But what I'm not is saying I'm an expert in your life. And that's where the difference between one of my other hats is as a GP mentor. Yes, of course, I know stuff about the NHS, but in theory, I could know absolutely nothing about what you do and still be able to coach you. I've worked with somebody who works in Ireland in a completely different field. I've worked with people who are psychologists. And when I was doing my coaching diploma, I was working with teachers and somebody who was a vicar, actually. So I don't have to know about your life. Sometimes people like the fact that I do, because there's a bit of knowledge. But really, my skill is to be able to ask useful questions and have a range of tools to help you move forward in whatever issue you're thinking about.
Amazing. That sounds, it sounds sort of all encompassing, but important to know that you don't necessarily have to be an expert in what that person does or what their qualifications are to help them move forwards, and that it's very distinct from mentoring. So how does your life as a career coach work? How does it fit into your week and alongside your GP work?
Well, it fits in fantastically for me. I'm a portfolio GP, so I would say my portfolio is doctor wellbeing and education. So I'm a training program director. I'm a mentor for GPs locally where I am in Coventry and Warwickshire. I'm an appraiser. I'm head of development at a not-for-profit organisation called The Joyful Doctor. And I do various locum roles. So for me, what I value is challenge and interest and meaning, but also variety. So it's very flexible. It's really up to me to decide how many coaching clients I want to work with and how that's going to fit in. And being clear and boundaried around that if I want to be, or I could flex it and do more. But for me, it fits really well. But I've learned over the years, because I've been doing it for a number of years now, how to work it in a way that works alongside my other roles and the other things that are important, like my family life and my interests.
And you mentioned there about sort of very flexible, and it's nice to see that you can, there's lots of different bits of your portfolio that are quite complementary to each other, and that coaching's just one part of that. To give people an idea, if you sort of take on a client or a doctor or a clinician per se, what sort of time commitment, how does that fit into your other sort of activities?
Coaches, you can decide how you choose to work. I like to work it where if I'm working with somebody on a fairly sort of chewy topic, like do I want to leave my job or do I want to change careers, usually I do a series of 6 hours, and I do that usually over about 6 months, but it can be shorter because usually right at the beginning, that's when people really want to get stuck in, they're in discomfort. And so I might concertina the first few closer together and then do them spaced out. But I do them as an hourly session, and I'll either do them on Zoom, or increasingly I'm doing walking coaching with them. And that doesn't mean that they're near me, but we might go for a walk together. So I'll put in my earphones, they'll go for a walk, and we both walk and talk. So you're kind of doing the well-being hack where you're getting moving, you're getting the green or blue into your eyes, but also people think differently. There's lots of really good evidence for thinking more openly, more laterally, when you're not sitting in front of the same old workspace, sitting at the laptop that you get all your work emails from. And I really enjoy that. And people seem to get a lot out of that as well, and just be a bit more free to new ideas, actually, and also have a bit more perspective.
That's amazing. I hadn't really ever thought about doing that, sort of going for a walk, but not with someone, but still with them and thinking differently in the way it changes your perspective. So it's probably worth thinking about that just from a point of view of consultations and patients and any sort of interaction where you're coming up with new ideas or working through problems. You're clearly an enthusiast, Sarah. You talk very inspirationally about all the activities that you're involved in, and clearly have done a lot to help others through their career and difficult times they've had. How did you get into it all?
I think I've always had an interest in sort of mental health. When I was at university, I helped with the nightline and was involved in sort of career skills, chose a medical school that was very communication skills based. And then when I did a lot of traveling, I've always had a portfolio career. I worked abroad, I did expedition medicine, as soon as I finished GP training, I did a GP reg post in medical education, and I asked, can I work at the what would now be called something like the Professional Support and Wellbeing Unit, but was the Careers Decisions Unit? And I said, oh, can I do that? And they said, you're a bit too much of a baby GP. Go away and have some life experience and come back. And I did, and I trained in various qualifications, medical education. I worked as a family planning doctor. I did out of hours. I considered doing gender medicine, and I worked as a GP partner. And during that time, I slowly but surely burnt out, if I'm honest. And at the time, I didn't realise it. And a questionnaire came out from NHS England. And I thought, oh, another of these emails I've got to finish. And I got allocated 3 sessions of coaching. Now, in retrospect, I must have fulfilled some burnout criteria, but the penny didn't drop. So I had these sessions, but I wasn't really sure what they were all about. And by the third one, I went, I think I need to leave my partnership. The thing about coaching is you it gives you a space to kind of get those thoughts out of your head, a bit like, you know, the Poncive in Harry Potter. You pull them out of your head and then you can look at them differently and notice what's going on for you. And then that gives you the power to go, what can I do about that? And so being coached, even though I didn't really know what it was for, actually helped me see the benefit of it. And then on the day that I left my partnership, I got an email asking if I wanted to be a mentor locally. And I was like, yes. And I suddenly remembered that I'd wanted to be involved in this space years ago, but other things, you know, children, moving to follow the husband's career, all of that had come along. So yeah, that was 2018. And then I gradually started looking into it, joined the Joyful Doctor as a coach, became head of coaching, did a lot of well-being talks during the pandemic about burnout. And then I trained and did a diploma in transformational coaching alongside that while I was coaching. So I've been doing it for, I think, 6-7 years now, formally as a coach. But I think there are lots of elements of it that we do as we train in GP, you know, NLP, motivational interviewing. A lot of our consultation skills are very coaching aligned. So there's a really good overlap. It's very sort of synergistic, I would say.
That's good to know for people sitting there thinking, oh yeah, that sounds like me. I was the person who was interested in being a mentor and supporting colleagues and trainees and peers. You mentioned there a coaching diploma. Do you feel there's any sort of specific requirements or experiences that are useful or mandatory to get to sort of set yourself up as a coach or get involved in coaching?
This is the really uncomfortable thing for medics, because we like a piece of paper to tell us that we're good enough. As I said, it's not a regulated industry, which can feel a little uncomfortable. In theory, we could say that we're a coach and do it without having done any extra qualifications. As it happened, I'd done those other bits of training along the way because it was an interest. I personally think there is a value in learning basic coaching techniques. You don't have to. And people do get very het up. And I remember going down a real rabbit hole going, but which is the right course to do? And what I would say, with a couple of exceptions, nearly everybody absolutely loves whatever training course they do. So it's a matter of having a look at what speaks to you. And the one I chose fits with how I best learn, which is very experiential. The person who did it now specifically runs them for medics, actually, after I went on it, because he said, I could see that you're already further along. And that was his niche. But it was being able to do it rather than just write about it. And personally, I felt like it gave me a lot more, a wider range of tools. And it helped me think in a more academic way about it, actually. And it helped get other people watching me coach and hold me to account, like, I'm one of the really old cohort that did, when I did the MRC GP, I had to submit videos. Obviously, they've come back and everyone's shuddering at how awful they were. But the power of being observed is incredibly useful in terms of learning how you're doing it. Because as a medic, it's really hard sitting on your hands. And we all know about the golden minute when we're consulting with patients. But actually, in coaching, it's very similar. You're meant to leave that space, not ask closed questions. And so just those disciplines of knowing how to ask the questions, how to leave space, how not to insert yourself into it too much, but also having things like supervision, which is recommended. I had mine this morning. And developing your coaching skills to work out the type of coach you want to be, and looking at areas where you might need a bit of support yourself alongside it. So for me, yes, you don't have to, but I'd strongly recommend it personally. And it's so useful in all areas of life. I learned stuff about it that I bring to family interactions, to friends, to being a doctor. And certainly as a training program director, I often reference bits of it. So I don't think anyone would ever regret it, even if they didn't become a coach. I think it's really useful life skills and fascinating.
Awesome. So, I mean, it sounds like you got an awful lot out of doing that. You mentioned something there about supervisions. Can you tell us a bit more about that and what is involved in that if you're being supervised as the coach?
there are different ways of doing it. One is that you basically, a bit like a Berlin group, actually, I suppose, you turn up and you go, okay, what's an issue for you related to coaching? And depending on where you source that supervision, because usually you would pay for it, and often people would get that through whoever they trained. I get it because I'm through the Joyful Doctor. And it's bringing issues around either your skills or worries you have about the people you're working with, or a technique you might want to practice. So it might be that they watch you do some coaching and you either do it live or you bring an example of it, or you just say, look, I'm wondering about this. And there are, as a group, you may find different ways of talking around it, and different supervision setups will work differently. So the coaching that I did was accredited through a particular coaching organization, the International Coaching Federation. And if you're a member of that, you can access supervision through that. So it's best practice. It's not like appraisal, but I suppose it's not dissimilar. It's helping you look at what you're doing and know that what you're doing is the right thing, but also it's a safe space because actually you're working very intimately with people, and actually you need to look after yourself as part of it. And I've often said we should have this as doctors, and I feel medical students should have it as well, as a routine part of how we look after ourselves. But I certainly think if you're working in the coaching space, it's something I'd really recommend.
And good to hear that some qualifications and organisations have that tied to sort of developing you as a coach and making sure that, you know, you feel supported and you've got somewhere to go with issues. You've mentioned there the Joyful Doctor a couple of times as an organisation that you're involved in. And for those who don't know, could you just tell us what that is?
Certainly. It's a not-for-profit organisation focused on doctor well-being. And it was set up by Dr. Caroline Walker, who people may have seen particularly in the pandemic, did a lot of public speaking. She's a psychiatrist who's had various illnesses. She's very overt about this, in addictions and burnout and bipolar disorder. And she realized that there was when she was going through feelings of suicidality, that there really wasn't a space, an organisation that particularly looked at doctors and how to support them. So it's separate to the organisations such as Practitioner Health, but it provides coaching or training, and now it's helping to focus on publishing books that doctors want to do. So it's done a lot of work in that space, and she also has a podcast. And I worked as a coach and a trainer, and I've also been head of coaching and now head of development at the organisation. So they work alongside a lot of, for example, ICBs providing sets of coaching, and they do paid coaching. They have had some pro bono stuff where coaches are willing to. But yeah, it's a fantastic organisation that I've been very proud to be associated with.
I'm sure we can certainly share the links for podcasts and the Joyful Doctor in the links below for people to look into it more, because it certainly sounds like a worthwhile organisation. Just thinking about, you know, the qualifications that you mentioned and how that can be a helpful thing just as a GP, even if you don't necessarily pursue the coaching line of work. Have you got any ideas about sort of funding or bursaries, or did you have access to that sort of thing if someone sat there thinking, well, I'd love to do all of this, but I've got no idea where to start or how to support myself with the time and funding to do it?
Yeah, I think it depends on where you work. Certainly, I think there are some fellowships that include training. And I would say if you're considering becoming a coach, have some coaching yourself so you know what it actually is, would be my first one. I'm not familiar with bursaries. I think if you work and you fund yourself as a limited company, for example, you can do it as a form of CPD and you can pay for it through that. Because coaching training, if you go for a sort of diploma level, they often start at around £2,000. They can be up to six or more. So it's not a small investment to make. But I think people have managed to access stuff depending on if they're a GP and if they're getting sort of little pockets of resilience funding, can they do that as a string to their bow if they then promise to use it XYZ? But I don't think there's a set place for it, as far as I'm aware. But I'd love to hear if there is.
Good to sort of think about, yeah, think a little bit more outside the box in terms of resilience money and things like that, that people might be able to, pitch in the right way if they think it's going to help them or those around them in the workspace. So, I mean, we've heard a lot about the enthusiasm that you have for this and how you came to be a very successful coach. I'm thinking sort of about your journey and what you do now. What do you think are the main benefits for you of being a coach?
I find it an incredible honour to sit with people and let them realise what's important to them and help them basically become happier and give themselves permission to look after themselves. So I've seen how transformative it can be, and I've had people say to me, I really didn't realise ... about how I was feeling. And actually now I'm doing this, I feel completely differently. And my experience of life is just so much richer. So for me, I find it incredibly satisfying, because actually as doctors, we're very skilled at having this level of interaction with people and quite a great deal of complexity. And I just find it interesting. But it's a real honour to sit and have that period of time to let people make that change for themselves.
And for you, are there any downsides or things that people ought to think about before sort of heading down that route?
Yeah, I've had lots of people saying, oh, I'd love to be a coach. How do I do it? And I think what I would say is that it's not going to replace a big funding stream for you. You know, people are struggling at the moment. And what I've noticed is lots of my coaching clients are very burnt out. And that can be difficult to sit alongside people that are really struggling, as well as also being a doctor who sees patients who are really struggling in this economy. You have to set yourself up as a business. Unless you work for an organisation, you know, you might work for one of these support units, in which case they will need an accredited coaching qualification, but you're having to do it all on your own. So I've had to create my own website, have a think about what my branding would be very organized, and that's not something that I excel at. And actually I've used a PA recently to help me set up Calendly, which I'm useless at. So you have to also be comfortable with charging people money for stuff. And working out, okay, how are you going to find those clients? Even if you're really keen and you're brilliant, I spent a lot of time on social media, and just really, it can be quite a negative space because you're constantly comparing yourself to other people and assuming they've got loads of work. In the end, actually, I don't think social media was a place where I really got work. But it's a plus and a minus. If you are entrepreneurial and you really like learning about new things, you will enjoy various bits of the journey, but they are all very new skills. How much can I charge? How much should I charge? What's the way in which that I send an invoice? It's an entirely new business that you have to set up from scratch if that's the way you're doing it. And I work, that's how I do it, because I don't do it for an organization. So, yeah, there's lots to consider, but also that's quite fun and interesting and different, which is very different to GP. And lots of GPs are very creative and would love that. And one of our trainees had already successfully run an organisation in Pakistan before he came over. You know, he already had those skills, whereas for me, it was really starting from scratch and not ones that I was necessarily the best at. So that's been a stretch.
But really sort of salient advice around thinking about, yeah, all the sides, the other bits that go alongside running a business and not-for-profit and, you know, invoicing. And some may be, you know, familiar with all those things through locuming or setting up their own business to support that. But, yeah, it is a different skill set. And, yeah, asking people for money isn't something necessarily we're comfortable with in the NHS in the same way as other organisations. So definitely worth thinking about that entrepreneurial side and how you're going to make it viable if you're sort of starting down that route, even if you are keen and enthusiastic. So think that is really helpful to have that advice before people sort of jump and think, right, I'm signing up for a £2,000 coaching course tomorrow. So thinking about, you know, you've given lots of helpful advice already, but are there sort of key advice you'd give to someone thinking about, right, okay, I really am interested, I'm really enthusiastic, it really aligns with what I'd like to do. I've got a few entrepreneurial skills as a bonus, but what do I do next? Or say I've done a coaching course, how do I then go about utilising it or working out what to do with it?
I think usually if you do a course, there's quite often an aligned organisation that you can ask questions of. It's finding a bit of a tribe. So where can I ask these questions, get advice from colleagues, speak to an experienced person? I think it is worth asking the question at the beginning, right at the beginning, why am I wanting to do this? Because I think there are lots of people going, right, how do I diversify my career and what is it that I'm hoping to get from it? So am I hoping to fully replace my, you know, a whole day of GP, in which case, how much do I need to do in order to do that? Just really look at the nitty gritty of the finances. I think often people, while they are doing coaching training, if they choose to, will start thinking about who am I really passionate about working with? Because often people coach what they have experience with or what they really care about. So that will change how you then form your business or how you choose to work or how much you're wanting to do. So it's getting clear on what you're doing it for. And don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, speak to other people that are doing it. I'd really recommend having some coaching if you haven't, so you know what it is that you're getting yourself in for. Because as I said, there's a very diverse range of coaching. And what you think it is really important to know, is it actually that I'm getting myself trained for? And just getting clear so that when you get to a bit like a SMART goal, isn't it? That when you get to the end, it's going to tick what you actually wanted it to do.
And I suppose in that vein, sort of thinking about a tribe, are there any networks or websites or groups that you think are worth looking into? Anywhere that people should start looking for that? Obviously, it'll be different depending on where they are, but are there any sort of national organisations that it's just worth being clued up about?
There are the three main accredited organisations. The one I mentioned, the ICF, that has a lot of different links on it and talks all about training as a coach, for example, through them. And it has the links to the various organisations who provide training. And those will all look very differently. And I can certainly give links to the other ones as well. I spent ages having a look at that and then having a look at different types of coaching organisations. I'm speaking to people who were coaches as well and going, okay, what is it that you do and how do you do it? Certainly the guy that I trained through has his own podcast as well. And he talks, and that's a really interesting one to listen to because it's specifically coaching for doctors. And it talks about coaching techniques, things that come along, setting yourself up as a business. So I'd recommend that as well. Just get yourself into the coaching space and see what it sounds like. Listen to podcasts, have a feel for it, and see whether that is something that you think you'd enjoy.
That's been so inspirational, Sarah, because I think there's so many things about being a GP that have some of those skill sets, but I do think it's so important that you've highlighted the other skills that are important and to sort of think very strategically from the beginning about, well, why am I doing this? What might I want to do at the end of it before, you know, you throw lots of money about it or sort of embark down a course? And I think finding a tribe is definitely a theme through all of these podcasts about finding the people who are doing it already. Where do you fit into that network? So that's been really great to hear that echoed in your case as well. We're asking people to sort of end on positivity. I feel in your case we've had positivity throughout, but would you mind just sharing what your highlight is of being a coach?
Imagine my mind being a bit like in the Matrix and flicking through all of the people that I've worked with. And I think if I can think through somebody that I've worked with recently, it was somebody who was a very burnt out, but they didn't realise quite how burnt out they were, GP partner, who felt very ashamed that they just weren't enjoying what they were doing and they weren't quite sure what to do next. And by the end of coaching, they had made some career changes and they were much healthier, and they now had plans about doing more work outside, perhaps even becoming an exercise instructor alongside working as a GP, but in a way that fitted with their family life. And they were just lit up with the possibilities and excitement about their life in a way that they were completely the opposite of when I first met them. I've got loads of stories like that, but in my background. And what can be difficult as a coach is, you don't always know what the outcome is from coaching, because often the good stuff happens in between your sessions or afterwards, because it's the processing and thinking that goes along. So you have to have a little bit of faith that it's made a difference, but sometimes you do get examples like that.
Oh, well, that's really, really nice to hear. And I suppose that sort of feedback and positivity just encourages you more and gives you that sense of what you're doing is being so worthwhile, which it certainly sounds like it's made a difference to lots of people. So thank you very much for sharing your story with us, Sarah, because I'm sure there's lots of people who are sat there thinking, God, that just sounds so fascinating. And perhaps it's something I ought to find out more about, or indeed get some coaching, even if I'm not necessarily thinking I want to become a coach. It's such a useful skill and something to have an insight into. So thank you very much for giving up your time today, and as you mentioned, it sounds like there's lots of useful links, and we'll certainly be able to share some of those in the wraparound support if people want to look into it more.
My absolute pleasure, Sophie.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening, and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.